biosystems, pollution, climate change, increase of population, injustice, and low quality of life of humans in the present and future. Therefore, activists of tourism try to put tourism within the framework of sustainable development to pay full attention to the environmental, economic, social, and cultural aspects of tourism industry. Tourism industry is an effective factor for decrease of poverty and establishment of social justice. But further development of this industry requires awareness of individuals of various aspects of tourism and its relation with other parameters of sustainable development. Accordingly, tourism has to be planned in a way that, while it is economically profitable, its destructive effect on the environment of the host country reduces to almost zero. Dear listeners, it is interesting to note that tourism has different kinds, such as historical tourism, sports tourism, health tourism, ecotourism, and so on. However, since human beings are interested in new experiences, national and local foods have been highly welcomed by tourists across the world. Food culture and habits of host country have gained importance for many tourists. In other words, food builds a strong bond between the history and culture of the host nation and tourists. Food and drink are today considered as among the main symbols to introduce the culture, tradition, behavior, and ecological views of various ethnicities. Food tourism is an industry and was used in 2001 for the first time. Eric Wolf, manager of the International Tourism Unity, used it in his article Food and Culinary Tourism. The article changed into a book later on and contained useful information about tourism for students and activists of the field. Experts of demography maintain that foods and drinks have a special position in customs and temperaments of individuals. Thus, food is considered as a key element in demography, anthropology, and civilization. Food tourism has had a lucrative market for the past years. Approximately $200 billion of the world economy owes its profit to food tourism, and every tourist pays $150 to $200 for food during his travel. Iran is very rich in terms of food and drinks. This country enjoys one of the richest tablecloths in the world, with over 2,500 traditional and local foods and 109 drinks. Iranian cuisine has been the third known cuisine in the world after the Chinese and Roman ones. The variety of food in Iran is very high, and every region and ethnicity has its own specific food and drink. Many of these ethnicities and subcultures have numerous foods and drinks. For sure, climate variety is an effective factor in the structure and ingredients of foods. Iranians, in addition to various foods and drinks, enjoy specific customs and traditions for cooking, eating, and drinking them. This has its roots in the ancient culture of this nation. Well, that marks the end of this episode. Thanks for being with us, and God bless you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, moderation in food and sleep. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of moderation in food and sleep in the Islamic lifestyle. Obviously, when we are the human beings, we need to feed this material body in order to have energy, and therefore we consume food. Now, there are a couple of types of foods which are being described by the material world as junk food or the healthy food. Other than that, there are some specific rules which we need to follow if we want to have an Islamic lifestyle. On top of that, we need to have the proper time to sleep as well. We cannot sleep for more than a specific time, because if we do so, we are wasting the time. Therefore, in the Islamic teachings, when we talk about the food first, it says that kulu washrabu wa la tusrifu. Islam permits you to eat and drink, but do not be extravagant. Do not waste the things. And that's why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the verse has said that annahu la yuhibbul musrifin, that Allah does not likes or loves the extravagant. Therefore, it is necessary to eat what we need. And intellectually, we can think about this, that when every year we see that certain countries or every country, they throw away the waste, they throw away the food because it is more than the need, it shows us that we are not eating according to what is the need, and we consume or maybe we buy more than what is needed for the body. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of moderation in the food and sleep. We said that it is necessary to eat and consume food up to the need that we have. On the other hand, we have many narrations which says that when you sit on the table, on the dinner table or the food table, eat up to a level which leaves you at the end a bit hungry and not be full with the food. Because when we eat too much or we are full or the stomach is full, we are unable to stand up, we are unable to move easily. Therefore, if we want to have a healthy life, it is necessary to eat to a level where at the end we feel a bit more of consuming food, but we do not consume that food so that our body can easily move. On the other hand, about the sleeping matter, it is necessary to sleep on time. It is said to divide your time in four timings. There is a time for the for worshiping, there is a time for the family, there is a time for work, and there must be a time to sleep. Therefore, we must not eat a lot so that when we sleep and we cannot wake up. And therefore, there are many things which are being narrated. For example, about the Prophet Musa alayhi salam, once he asked Satan that, what things do you like in me? And he said that in the night when you eat food, you eat and you fill your stomach, and I like that. And he said, why do you like that? He said, because in the morning when you have to wake up for worshiping, you do not wake up on time, or maybe you become lazy. And I like that. And from there onwards, the Prophet Musa alayhi salam had promised himself that I will not eat food in the night in a way that I am full. Therefore, it is necessary to have the moderate way to control our food and to control our timings for waking, working, and sleeping, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Protesters have returned to major cities across Europe to voice their anger at the rising cost of living across the continent. In Spain, people held a massive rally in Madrid against what they call the regional government's dismantling of the public health care system. Officials say 250,000 people turned out, but organizers put the number as high as a million. That is the largest such demonstration in recent months. Protesters accuse the regional government of prioritizing private health. They say the public health service is suffering from staff and equipment shortages because of the government's policies. Some primary care doctors and healthcare workers have also been holding regular strikes over better working conditions and pay.
The condition of the public health system is deteriorating. The number of doctors have been decreasing with medical conditions getting worse. Many medical centers have been closed.
The region's right-wing leader has repeatedly claimed that the protesters are motivated by political interests. And in the Portuguese city of Lisbon, tens of thousands of teachers have taken to the streets amid public discontent over the cost of living crisis. It is the third time in less than a month that teachers and school workers have held mass demonstrations. Teachers want a pay rise and are also calling on the government to speed up career progression. Officials say negotiations with teachers' unions are ongoing and expressed hope that an agreement would be reached soon. Portugal is one of Western Europe's poorest countries, which is seeing decades-high inflation and is grappling with the cost of living crisis.
We are here to claim our rights, which were taken away from us a long time ago. Our careers have been frozen for a long time, and that can't be. We have the right to have a more dignified career. We can't work like this. It just can't be.
Protests in Spain and Portugal come as passengers across Germany have witnessed widespread travel chaos after a major trade union called on airport workers to go on a strike over a pay dispute. Verdi Trade Union called for the industrial action after it said collective bargaining efforts to settle wage disputes with the government failed. Since last year, European airlines have been facing labor strife amid staff shortages and soaring inflation, which have prompted employees to demand higher wages. German officials say despite a recent improvement, the economy is expected to suffer another mild decline in early 2023, as energy prices for households are still increasing. German consumer prices, harmonized to compare with other European Union countries, peaked at 11.6% in October, driven by the surge in energy prices and rising input costs. In the UK, more than 70% of UK households fear that they will be severely hit by the cost of living crisis in the first part of 2023, up from 54% at the end of last year.
Nobody actually wants to be on strike. We want to do our jobs. We want to look after the students here. This is what our passion is. But we've been driven into a situation where we can't even pay our bills now. So basically, we've been forced to do this. Nobody works in education to be rich, but we'd like to have a decent standard of life. And I think we're losing a lot of staff as well. A lot of people are leaving because of the pay.
Meanwhile, in France, police clashed with people protesting the government's pension reform bill. Hundreds of thousands of people attended the rally, which was held in a number of other cities across France, seeking to keep up pressure on the government over the reform plan, which aims to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. President Emmanuel Macron says the reform is vital to ensuring the viability of the pension system.
We would like the age of retirement to remain the same. 62 is already enough for working people like us. We work in kindergarten in the way, and we don't see ourselves working with children at 64. It's already quite hard currently, and going farther isn't possible.
This is a democracy, and people only have a month to debate the pension reform. The government has kept its project hidden for months, despite the fact that it was ready, and they only yield on details when people take to the streets. Well, we will keep going.
The economic crises have been compounded by the protracted war in Ukraine. The war has pushed up prices, including the price of commodities like energy products. Furthermore, European nations have pledged billions of dollars worth of military aid to Ukraine. And that has sapped the capacities of European major economies to spend money on social welfare programs. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, visited China for an official three-day state visit aimed at building up bilateral ties. The Iranian president arrived in Beijing earlier on Tuesday as the head of a high-ranking politico-economic delegation on an official invitation by his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping in Beijing. Speaking to reporters before leaving Tehran for Beijing, Raisi said that Iran and China have similar views on fighting unilateralism at the international level. During the trip, the two countries sought to operationalize the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Agreement, which was finalized in March 2021 in a bid to strengthen their long-standing economic and political alliance. The $400 billion deal will pave the way for Iran's Joining the Belt and Road Initiative, which is a massive infrastructure project stretching from East Asia to Europe. Xi and Raisi attended the signing of 20 cooperation agreements, adding to a 25-year partnership agreement to cooperate in developing oil, industry, and other fields. The two sides signed a number of bilateral cooperation documents in the fields of agriculture, trade, tourism, environmental protection, health, disaster relief, culture, and sports. The Chinese leader said Beijing opposes external forces interfering in Iran's internal affairs and undermining Iran's security and stability. And President Ebrahim Raisi said that Iran and China are friends in hard times, stressing that further strengthening of relations between the two countries will contribute to the security of the region and the world. The visit comes amid rapid geopolitical shifts in the wake of protracted Ukraine war and the end of the unipolar world order led by the U.S. and its Western allies. China is now among Iran's top trading partners. Since 2022, the 10-month figure of trade between the two nations stands at $25.3 billion. That figure has surpassed the volume of trade between Iran and its other neighboring countries, like the UAE, Turkey, and Iraq. Since March of last year, Iran imported $12.7 billion worth of goods from China, and its exports to Beijing stood at $12.8 billion. President Raisi took office back in 2021, and since then he has tried to readjust Iran's foreign policy with a focus on Eastern countries, which has come to be known as the Look to the East policy. It aims to forge alliances with non-Western countries, especially China and Russia. Moreover, Iran is joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a key regional bloc where China is a co-founder. The bloc is a counterweight against U.S.-led security and economic blocs and could significantly reduce the hegemony of the U.S. in Asia. SCO member countries account for more than 40% of the world's population and contribute about 30% of the global gross domestic product, GDP. It's widely believed that Iran's close partnerships with countries like China will significantly erode Western hegemony and pave the way for a new world order.
Foreign ministers from France, Germany, Italy, and the United Kingdom have followed the United States in denouncing the planned expansion of Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank. In a statement, the ministers said, "We strongly oppose these unilateral actions, which will only serve to exacerbate tensions between Israelis and Palestinians and undermine efforts to achieve a negotiated two-state solution. We continue to support a comprehensive, just, and lasting peace in the Middle East, which must be achieved through direct negotiations between the parties." Norwegian Foreign Minister also condemned Israel's plans, saying the Israeli settlement policy on occupied land is contrary to international law and must be stopped. The Israeli settlement plans have also drawn condemnation from the Arab world. However, Israel's controversial right-wing minister Itamar Ben-Gvir said he wanted to see more Jewish settlements.
"I say to Americans and Europeans, it's so worrying. This is our mission. This is our doctrine. Nine settlements are nice, but it's not enough. We want much more."
The comments fly in the face of international calls for a de-escalation of tensions between Israelis and the Palestinians after months of violence in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. The international community views the settlements, hundreds of which have been built across the West Bank since Tel Aviv's occupation of the territory in 1967, as illegal under international law and the Geneva Conventions due to their construction on the occupied territories. The UN Security Council has condemned Israel's settlement activities in the occupied territories in several resolutions. Hossein al-Sheikh, a senior Palestinian official, welcomed the joint statement by Western powers condemning Tel Aviv's plan to build more illegal settlements, but said action needed to be taken. In a statement on Twitter, he said, "We demand that words be turned to deeds." Hardliners who oppose Palestinian statehood comprise a large part of Israel's new cabinet, which has put settlement construction at the top of its priorities. Extremist Israeli minister Bezalel Smotrich said about 10,000 new homes are to be approved. Smotrich said he and his allies were committed to removing completely the restrictions on building in the occupied West Bank. Today, between 600,000 and 750,000 Israelis live in these seizable settlements, equivalent to roughly 11% of the total Jewish Israeli population. The Palestinians seek those territories for a future independent state. Since then, the Tel Aviv regime has openly funded and built settlements for Israeli Jews to live there, offering incentives and subsidized housing. Their statements by the Western powers will likely have little effect on the Israeli hardliners. The regime has never been subjected to real sanctions or accountability. The Israelis have never suffered any pressure, so they keep doing what they're doing. 2022 was the deadliest year for Palestinians in the West Bank since the United Nations started keeping records in 2005. Over 140 Palestinians were killed in the West Bank last year. But already this year, we are only halfway through the second month of 2023, and Israel has already killed around 50 Palestinians in the West Bank. Israel has also regularly bombed Gaza, and now, with a right-wing cabinet in place, the situation is only expected to get worse. Israel's far-right cabinet has approved the legislation for 9 settler outposts in the occupied West Bank. All settlements are illegal according to international law, but who pays attention to international law in this occupied land? years of war in Syria has destabilized the region, which is still suffering from an ongoing humanitarian emergency. Millions are displaced within Syria or have fled to Turkey, which is contending with high inflation and a deepening economic crisis. The earthquake unleashed widespread damage and destruction in some of the most at-risk areas in the region. A magnitude 7.8 earthquake struck near Nurdaghi in southern Turkey around 4:17 a.m. local time on February 6th. A magnitude 7.5 earthquake followed around later that afternoon around 1 p.m. local time, along with scores of powerful aftershocks. Thousands are injured and thousands more remain trapped in the rubble, and the chance of finding survivors gets narrower and narrower. Search and recovery operations continue with assistance from teams around the world. But freezing weather is hampering rescue efforts and making it even more difficult to access possible survivors. This catastrophe hit an already fragile region, which has been marked by decades of war in Syria and economic, humanitarian, and public health crises. Turkey is facing a profound economic crisis, with a collapsing currency and extraordinary inflation that hit around 80% last year, the highest in about 25 years. The quake-hit part of Turkey also hosts a large population of Syrian refugees. The economic crisis in Turkey has helped fuel a backlash against the approximately 3.6 million Syrian refugees in the country, who are already facing poverty, discrimination, an increase in violent attacks, and the risk of deportation. More than 2 million people in northwestern Syria are also at risk of a deadly cholera outbreak. The outbreak began in northeastern Syria, attributed to contaminated water from the Euphrates River, which people were relying on in part because of the water infrastructure destroyed by years of fighting. About 47% of people in Syria rely on unsafe drinking water, a potentially even bigger risk after the massive infrastructure damage by the earthquake. In northwest Syria, in particular, this outbreak was straining an already stretched and under-resourced health system, which will now also need to find ways to treat those injured in the earthquake. The devastation extends beyond northwest Syria, as the country as a whole has been overwhelmed by years of war and destruction. International sanctions against Syria are also deepening the economic crisis Syrians face. The country faces record and widespread poverty and food shortages. About 90% of Syrians live below the poverty line, and nearly 75% struggle to meet their most basic needs. And across the region, the crisis is still acute, as agencies and officials rush to find survivors in the rubbles and temperatures drop. The earthquake compounds catastrophe upon catastrophe in Syria and Turkey. It is likely to exacerbate those that already exist while creating new, unpredictable ones. The United Nations Secretary General says Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has agreed to open two more border crossings to facilitate relief aid delivery to the northern part of the quake-hit country, which is held by militants. Antonio Guterres announced the development after Assad approved the use of Bab al-Salam and al-Ra'i crossings, which link Turkey to northwestern Syria for outreach purposes. In line with the presidential decree, the crossings would be open for an initial period of 3 months to allow for the timely delivery of humanitarian aid. In addition to authorizing transit through the border passages, the UN chief said facilitating humanitarian access, accelerating visa approvals, and easing travel between hubs will allow more aid to go in faster. The announcement was made after the UN Security Council held a closed-door session on the humanitarian situation in Syria following the quake. The 7.8 magnitude quake that hit Turkey and neighboring Syria last Monday has so far claimed tens of thousands of lives. The biggest part of the fatalities that have been caused in Syria have occurred in the territory which is being held by Takfiri terrorist groups. The approval issued by Assad came after the UN lamented that an anti-government group, which has been designated as terrorist by the international community, was preventing aid consignments from being delivered to the quake-hit areas in the northern part of Syria. A spokesman for the UN's Humanitarian Aid Office said on Sunday that there were issues with approval by the group, which was identified as the terrorist outfit Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS. Previously, a number of captured Takfiri terrorists had confessed to close cooperation to U.S. military forces in Syria. There have also been reports of U.S. supporting Takfiri terrorists and helping them to expand across Syria. Also on Sunday, Reuters quoted an HTS source who spoke on the condition of anonymity as confirming that the terror outfit will not let in shipments from government-held parts of Syria, alleging, "We won't allow the government to take advantage of the situation to show they are helping."
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International School. Here today we have some of the students of Sevier International School again, Brother Ali Nasir, Hussein Ruhullah, Brother Hassan Nasrullah, and Fawad Haider. Assalamu alaikum, brothers, how are you?
Wa alaikum assalam.
Fine, Hassan? Hussein?
Yes.
Okay, alhamdulillah. Ali Nasir, Fawad? Are you
Salaam,
all right?
Alhamdulillah.
Salaam alaikum. Welcome, brothers. The same as our previous sessions, inshallah, today we'll work on one of the verses of Surah Al-Baqarah. Brothers and sisters, I hope you have your Quran with you. Please stay with us till the end of this session. Page number 49. Ayah 283 of Surah Al-Baqarah. Inshallah. We'll practice this ayah. We'll have a short explanation plus the tajweed rules. So, everybody, before we start, let's once listen to the recitation of this ayah.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa in kuntum ala safarin wa lam tajidu katiban farihanun maqbudah. فَإِنْ أَمِنَ بَعْضُكُمْ بَعْضًا فَلْيُؤَدِّ الَّذِي اؤْتُمِنَ أَمَانَتَهُ وَلْيَتَّقِ اللَّهَ رَبَّهُ وَلَا تَكْتُمُوا الشَّهَادَةَ وَمَنْ يَكْتُمْهَا فَإِنَّهُ آثِمٌ قَلْبُهُ وَاللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ عَلِيمٌ.
Nice recitation. I will be reciting once, Fawad, Hassan, Hussein, Ali Nasir. You all will be listening and practicing, okay? Repeat after me. Our brothers and sisters as well, they have their Quran, inshallah, they will practice with us. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
وإن كنتم على سفر ولم تجدوا كاتبا فرهان مقبوضة.
وإن كنتم كنتم على سفر ولم تجدوا كاتبا فرهان مقبوضة
فإن أمن بعضكم بعضا فليؤدي الذي اؤتمن أمانته وليتق الله ربه
فإن أمن بعضكم بعضا فليؤدي الذي اؤتمن أمانته وليتق الله ربه
ولا تكتموا الشهادة ومن يكتمها فإنه آثم قلبه
ولا تكتموا الشهادة ومن يكتمها فإنه آثم قلبه
والله بما تعملون عليم
والله بما تعملون عليم
أحسنتم. Thank you so much. Allah Almighty bless you, inshallah. In the previous verses, we were talking about like giving someone some money. In the previous verses, we were talking about like giving someone some money on loan, yes, or charity, or yes. Someone asks us for some money, so you can give him, yes. And there were certain conditions that you have to pay attention, and then, like, whenever you want to give someone some money on loan, write it down, and these things, yes, certain conditions were there. In this ayah, Allah Almighty says that if you are on a journey and you can't find a writer. Nowadays, we can find a writer. Yes, we, alhamdulillah, we all, ourselves, we can write. Yeah? We can take some documents. We can do it by our own. Yes? We don't need any writer. But we can go to, like, there are some offices. Yes? We can go and make the documentations. But this ayah talks about this issue, that if you do not have a writer, if you cannot write, or you do not have someone to write for you, yeah, you're the contract. Yes? For example, you give someone some money on loan, and you need to write it. Yes? If you can't do this, what should we do? فَرِهَانٌ مَقْبُوضَ. You can get something in return. Okay? You can keep something, something from their properties. For example, yeah, like if you give him like 100,000 thumans, something that worth kind of 100,000 thumans, you can get from him, okay? You can keep it until he gives back the money, okay? This way, in return. Or if you have someone that you believe, you trust in him, you don't need to write down. Allah Almighty says, فَإِنْ أَمِنَ بَعْضُكُمْ بَعْضًا فَلْيُؤَدِّ الَّذِي اِتُمِنَ أَمَانَتَهُ وَلْيَتَّقِ اللَّهُ رَبَّهُ. You can trust him, okay? So, there are something more about this ayah, but this message, like the previous verses, alhamdulillah, we learned, okay, that we can take something in return. It's okay. There is no objection. Or we can, what? We can trust each other. Yes, our mu'min brother. So, more on this ayah, inshallah, I want you to refer to the Tafasir book, inshallah, to learn more, okay? Just a sample message from this ayah.
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض
حياتي. How to learn Quran easy. What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
Now we will move on with the Tajweed rules. Fawad, Hassan, Hussein, Ali Nasir. We will practice, inshallah, okay? All right?
Yes.
Brothers and sisters, thank you so much for being with us. Please stay with us. Now we'll move on with the Tajweed rules. The very first one is the ikhfa rule here.
Yes.
Wa in kuntum, ikhfa rule tells you that if you have a nun sakin or a tanwin, yes, plus
kaf,
kaf, ta, jim, afa, qaf, sin, shin, these letters which are from the rest of the letters, four groups we had. So if you have these letters, you have to apply the rule
ikhfa.
What does the rule ikhfa say for what?
You should hide the sound of the noon.
Yeah, you should hide the sound of the noon or the tanween. Sound, you should hide it. Sound. Produce the sound from your nose, a nasal sound, and that's all. Hide the sound. Hide the sound. Wa in kuntum. Right? The two.
Yes.
This is the first rule, important one. Ikhfa. Ala safarin. The second rule tells you the rule idgham. Yes?
Yes.
The second rule I have to tell you, the rule idgham. So the rule idgham says, Ali Nasir, that if you have nun sakin or tanween plus one of these six letters, ya, ra, mim, lam, waw, nun, together, yarmalun. One of these letters, if you have after nun sakin or tanween, apply the rule idgham. Hussein, what is the rule idgham?
Sir, merge.
Merging the sounds, joining the sounds together.
Yes.
Okay. Ala safarin, tanween plus waw. Merge the sound of tanween sound with waw. Safari. Right? Safari. Ala safari. A nasal sound also plus two counts. Two counts. Produce the sound for two counts. Prolong the sound.
Yes.
وَإِن كُنتُمْ عَلَى سَفَرٍ وَلَمْ تَجِدُوا right? وَلَمْ تَجِدُوا كَاتِبًا فَرِهَانٌ مَقْبُوضًا كَاتِبًا تَنْوِين plus fa fa's from the rest of the letters, the same as إِن كُنتُمْ إِخْفَى كَاتِبًا فَرِهَانٌ right? رِهَانٌ تَنْوِين it's nun also, تَنْوِين as well it has nun, yes? plus mim Idgham. Idgham, of course. Yar malun. Yes, meme, the letter meme. Fariha num maqbuda. Maqbuda, the third rule here is the rule qalqala, the bouncing, the echoing sound.
Letter qaf.
On the letter qaf, you have to apply the rule qalqala. Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
A bouncing sound. Maqbuda. Weak qalqala because it's in the middle.
Yeah.
Maqbuda. Right? So, Sila tells you for what?
Wasl is better. Oh,
Wasl is better. Yes, Hassan?
Tensioning is better.
Here, Hassan, should we continue or stop?
Stop.
Stop or continue?
Continue.
Continue or stop?
Continue.
Both are the same, right? Oh, I made him confused, yes? Okay. Same. Stop or continue, both are the same. No problem. فَإِنْ أَمِنَ نُون سَاكِين plus Hamza. The rule?
Izhar.
Just normally produce the sound of noon. فَإِنْ أَمِنَ بَعْضُكُمْ بَعْضًا One more rule I will tell you. The rest of them are easy, like we have practiced. So, فَإِنْ أَمِنَ بَعْضُكُمْ The rule إِقْلَاب will be applied here. إِقْلَاب or إِخْفَى? Mim sakin plus ba. إِخْفَى. Mim sakin plus ba. إِخْفَى. Hide the sound of mim. بَعْضُكُمْ Right? Hide the sound of
yes.
me. That's the final rule. The rest of them are the same. Only one more. Qila. Qila tells you, Hassan?
Better to stop.
Better to stop. Waqf is better than wasl.
Yes.
The rest of them are the same as the ikhfa rules, idgham rules. So, brothers and sisters, I hope you have learned something. Thank you so much for being with us. Brothers here also, thank you so much, Fawad, Hassan Hussein, and Ali Nasir. We will be here with you, inshallah, in the coming sessions tomorrow, inshallah, with you on IRIB English Radio. Stay with IRIB English Radio. Thank you so much. Thanks to IRIB English Radio. Thanks to Sevier International Schools Network. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa al-jil. Thank you.
Let's Recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Democracy in History Part 2
Perhaps it was because of Solon's reforms that Plato put poets behind the walls in his utopia or ideal city. Perhaps it was because he believed that it was poets who sentenced Socrates, his master, to death.
با چیزی که نیروها و قوای نفس میخوان با هم متفاوته ما باید جانب عقل
We should listen to our reason Plato's utopia was based upon that rule not what poets wanted or poetic thinking wished for
درست شده نه بر مبنای اون چیزی که شاعران میخواستند یا مورد نظر شاعران بود و تفکر شاعرانه میپسندید
In the Apology, Plato compares Socrates to a gadfly that disturbs the lazy horse of Athens' politics. But the reason Plato saw Athens as a lazy horse can be found in the contradictory relationship between Athens and Sparta. In ancient Greece, two Greek governments of Athens and Sparta were constantly at war, both with their swords and their beliefs. Just like the good and bad guys of old stories, they were always at loggerheads, from the method of governance to their treatment of people. The Spartans were soldiers. Sparta had a great military regime that had a government to rule over people. Boys who underwent military training under the care of the government at the age of 6 received a soldier's rations till the age of 30 and then had to eat at garrisons till the age of 60. A Spartan man would be exempted from the life of a soldier at the age of
60.
A true Spartan citizen was a military man till the age of 30. There were no exceptions. All their trainings were of the military kind, and they were not allowed to marry before 30. During that time, he was always ready to serve the government. He had to be ready to serve his city every minute of the day. And once that time was over, he had to get married. It was a governmental, aggressive, and power-hungry system.
Women fought, men fought, children underwent military training at an early age. Many of them died during the training because it was very tough and grueling. What you have heard about them leaving disabled children to die is probably because of this. They only wanted children who could fight.
This military state was governed by two kings, a king for war and a king for peace. One ran people's daily affairs and the other planned war strategies. But the structure of the government was based on consultation. The two Spartan kings were part of a council of elders known as the Gerousia, which consisted of 28 aristocrats over the age of 60. The votes of both kings held equal authority as others.
They had two kings who were in fact the leaders of their two main tribes. They had a council of elders called Gerousia. They were like a consulting board who decided whether to go to war or not. Those two were the military officials. We have the same in Rome, the Senate and the Emperor.
There was another council called the General Council of Appella, which accepted or rejected Gerousia's rulings without discussing their content. Something like the modern Senate. But all these councils were active at the time of peace. Whenever war started, the military was the main leader.
We don't know much about the Spartans' philosophical thinking to deduce what their thoughts and attitudes were rooted in. Aristotle and Plato always talked with respect about the Spartans and their government, saying that a strict system of order existed there, an order that it seems was undermined in the Athenian city-states.
Theoretical teachings in Sparta were sacrificed for practical and applied teachings. You may be able to compare it to some fascist regimes and even communist ones. You can compare it to them. Everything was governmental. There was no private sector.
The governments of Sparta and Athens were always at war because a bigger power was waiting for their weakening and fall at their doors. Iran. Iran was a vast country. It wasn't a city-state like Athens and Sparta. Iran's borders extended from the Indus to Egypt during the Achaemenid Empire. Establishing an integrated government of such a vast expanse to rule different clans and tribes looks impossible even today.
Every region had a different king who belonged to a similar ethnic orientation or political system. For example, they are Persian, and they all obeyed a king of kings. And this pattern is what defines the Iranian political structure by the late pre-Islamic period and a little afterwards during the Islamic period.
The Iranians had a federal government at the time. When Darius said, "I am Darius, the great king, king of kings, the king of countries," he was implicitly talking about a federal country. All these regions had their own governments and kings. But they all pay tribute to a central government in Anshan and Persia.
When Darius is talking about his subordinate regions in Behistun inscription, he says he has 23 dahyums, which can be translated into province or state. One of these states was Assyria, which used to be a kingdom state. Another one was Elam, which used to be a kingdom state. At that time, they all came together and united, and this united country had one ruler, who is called Kshatra Pavand, which can be translated as governor, better known by its Greek translation, satrap. Satrap is a governor who plays the role of a king, like in old kingdoms. For example, Cambyses, the satrap of Babylon, was the ruler of Babylon for a brief period, its king.
But this centralized structure did not allow the king's rulers in different parts of the country, who wielded a certain authority, be unable to make decisions. It is true that they were like the king's eyes and ears, but they always acted in accordance with Dariush's petition.
But becoming the ruler of such a vast kingdom was not an easy feat. The king had to be chosen by the gods and loved by his people. The combination of these two was called divine splendor.
This public participation in creating a government, civilization, and culture was rooted in the spiritual power that the ruler held. And where did he get that spiritual power from? From the divine revelations that were granted to him by divine splendor and goodness.
The policy I'm talking about is based on a concept called Kiten. Kiten means something like splendor. It was assumed that among all those kings that ruled different parts of the country and were united, one was chosen by gods, one was stronger than the others, and held a power called Kitin.
The concept of divine splendor was rooted in power. Anyone who became king had this splendor. Sitting on the throne entailed having this splendor, and anyone pulled down from his throne had lost his splendor. No one could become king without divine splendor. In Iran, when someone became king, he had the God's approval without a doubt, and people obeyed God's bidding. People bowed to the gods, not to any kings.
Those who deserved to rule were supposed to have certain features and experiences, and be devoid of any suspicion of passion or worldly desires because of these divine teachings and secret revelations.
In other Achaemenid inscriptions, you can find direct references to key words that show this policy. Ahura Mazda is the god who created the earth, people, and happiness. A serious question is, why these three? That's what was said in the past, for example. Marduk is a great god that created the king of Babylon. Ashur is the great god that granted victory to Ashur. Soldiers. Why earth? Why people? This is the first time people are mentioned. Why happiness? It's very odd. People's happiness.
IRIB English Radio.